All right, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Dr. Heather Lynn about exorcisms, about demons, evil archaeology, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Our final segment with Dr. Heather Lynn here as we talk about evil archaeology. Tell me what has been, in terms of archaeology, one of the most horrific discoveries you've stumbled across or heard about, Heather, in terms of this so-called evil archaeology.
Oh, there's so many. I think it goes about, I cover so many in the book, but in Egypt, for example, Austrian archaeologists found a pit of severed right hands. So the things like that are really bizarre. I think what you find with the severed hands, it was a logical explanation. It was that they were chopping them off as tokens or souvenirs of, you know, the defeat of their enemy. It was sort of a thing that they did. So a lot of times you'll find that there's perfectly rational explanations for this. So I think that what really constitutes something horrific is when you see disturbing arrangements of human remains.
Oh,
I think that's
God.
I think that's really the most frightening. So if you see a pit of severed right hands, that's odd, but it gets even weirder at that, where you start to find, you know, people putting bones in all different arrangements. And there's one case of the Capuchin crypt in Rome. It's not necessarily an excavation. It's there now, and people can go visit for reasons that we still don't even know. The Capuchin monks started to decorate 5 rooms of their crypt beneath their little church with the bones of their dead brothers and the bones of local orphans. And we're talking about over 4,000 people that their remains are just arranged in these elaborate ways as decoration. They're in huge chandeliers, candelabras, crosses, and there's even a huge coat of arms. And there's a plaque at the entrance that is a reminder for those who enter that they will also become bones. It says, "What you are now, we once were. What we are now, you shall be."
Jeez.
I think that's really creepy, and I think that sort of is the real thing that you find with creepiness in archaeology is, you know, there's explanations for everything, but then when you see the human remains and they're arranged in a way that is a reminder that, you know, life is fleeting, life is short, and that we're really just bones, I think that's what is really disturbing.
Why did the ancients seem to really enjoy human sacrifice?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions about that, and I couldn't find a really good scientific answer for that, because again, it's everybody's culture, you know, developed differently. And so, but one thing that I started to see later in some research was this indication that some of the people who commit mass human sacrifice in these ways, they also share this pattern of reaching out to entities. And so I don't know that they'd be demons. I don't know that they'd be angels or guides, or people will call them all different things. But in the past, demons weren't necessarily all bad, and it was a sort of a neutral thing. They did bad things, but you could also harness their potential for good, which was never a good idea. And all the stories, when they did that, it would never work out. It was like they were the ultimate trickster. So the human could feel that they were summoning or channeling a demonic spirit to get their help with something. But what they find is that, you know, they get the help, but then the joke would be on them when, you know, things wouldn't work out so well. So, you know, that's, I think, where we get that idea that Satan is the father of lies and this whole notion. So when you look at all these cultures in the past that perform not just some human sacrifice, but when you're looking at mass human sacrifice, like the Aztecs or, you know, different ones like that, you find that they were trying to sort of get in touch with these entities. Sounds a little out there, but it is a commonality that I have found, that even in modernity, so you have like the Nazis and these sorts of people who are trying to channel off-world or other-world beings. And so you could call those demons, certainly, but you could also call them aliens, or you could call them, you know, interdimensional beings. There's so many different ways to call it. But either way, the sort of thread that is similar through all of those is that these cultures will get in touch with an off-world entity that will seem as though they have great technological advice or insight or something to sort of say, I'm tempting you to listen to me and I'm going to give you all this, you know, reward in a sense. And then it happens and then the culture is rewarded and they have advancement. But then something else happens and they turn on each other and they start doing these mass sacrifices and some of which do mass suicides. And it becomes this complete like death culture. And so it's a weird thing that you see happening a lot of times. So, and no, it's just my personal observation of that though. So, nothing that I can completely back up with hard facts, unfortunately.
Why do you think, Heather, there's so much evil? It's huge out there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, isn't that a question? Why is there so much evil? I think people are opening themselves up to it. I think that it evil begets evil because of fear. So I think when people are fearful of the world around them, it makes them vulnerable to things that we would call evil. So I think it works in like a domino effect. But you know, I think that evil and demons in particular, they may not be real in that tangible sense where, you know, you want to think of them as the little, you know, red devils or whatever, because, you know, we've not had any demon skeletal remains. And some people have argued that we have, but for the most part, we've not had any remains. So I think that basically just the belief enough may make things real. The belief enough can inspire people, and these sorts of things can have lasting and real consequences that will appear then as evil. Evil is such a concept that is really hard to define, but I do know that we all recognize it when we see it.
Do you know John Zaffis?
No.
He's an expert in haunted possessions and things. Mm. And you believe some household items can be cursed as well.
Yeah, that's something that I wasn't sure about when I first started, you know, researching for this. I kind of thought, oh, that probably is silly. I don't think that's a, you know, but you do find that there's cursed object stories going back mostly to the early modern era, which is a time historians call the consumer revolution. And this is sort of a time where people started getting more things like home furnishings or paintings or jewelry. And so what's weird is that with the increase of all these things, you start to get this folklore of these items now being cursed or haunted in some way. And so I look at a lot of these in the book, and a lot of them end up having some reasonably, you know, explainable reasons, I guess, for why they're looked at as evil or scary or haunted. And some of them are probably not very haunted, but then other ones, you know, I don't know. And so this is another instance in the book. I actually throw it over to a paranormal investigator because I'm not a paranormal investigator in the sense that I go out with the tools to measure and, you know, record the scientific data. And so I spoke to Mike Ricksecker and discussed his experiences with whether or not something can be generally haunted. And so it was eye-opening, and I still wasn't sure how I felt about it until, you know, I had my own experiences while writing the book about, you know, the potential for this book that I had picked up for research and brought home that may or may not have been haunted or had some sort of negative force attached to it that led to what Bill Bean was referencing, which was my sort of ordeal while writing the book. And so after I wrote the book, I had to, you know, have this item blessed, or at least a friend told me I should do that. And I thought, well, there's no harm in it. I'm going to have that item blessed. And so, yeah, I think that there's a possibility now that you never know that negative energy can attach itself to objects and people and places as well.
It sure is. Let's take a few calls here for you. Let's pick it up by going to Isaiah in Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to the program. Hi, Isaiah.
Thank you, Mr. Laurie. Thank you. And I believe it's Heather.
Heather, it is. That's right.
Yes. Okay. Great. Excellent. Excellent, as usual, all the topics that you bring to Cal. Before I start anything, Mr. Laurie, I just wanted to share this with you. Sir, number one, I sense this very strong that within the next 2 to 3 months, there's a very big blessing coming to you and your family. I don't know where is it coming through, by what means, but I really believe that within the next 2 to 3 months, there's a very big, big blessing coming to you and your family. And number two, please write the book, sir. Write the book that you've been talking sometime. I know that you might be contemplating with regards to should I do it, should I not do it. Please write the book. I really believe it's going to be a bestseller. I really do.
Okay.
The one about Christ and the cross and stuff like that. thank you. Ms. Heather, I thank you so much for the information that you're sharing. This topic, of course, has so many things to talk about. But with regards to also bringing it and resuming it a little bit more, with regards to oppression and possession, when we deal with oppression, it has to do with bombarding the mind. Oppression or spirits of oppression or demons of oppression, what they do is they attack the mind. They're external. They're not internal, not like possession, that they're internal, where they want to take over the person completely. Oppression deals with the mind. It comes against the mind, against the thoughts. It starts putting certain thoughts of many, many things. Not saying that everything bad that a person thinks about is necessarily a demon of oppression, of course. Now, you know, but it starts bombarding the person's mind to the point that they can't sleep, they cannot get to think right, because these words, these comments, these situations are coming against the mind. Of course, this can lead to possession, but that's the difference between oppression. Oppression is a spirit that's external and it comes against the mind, while possession is internal and it possesses, it wants to take dominion over the person. With regards to that, also, there are five different divisions of demons. Of course, we're not going to get into it, but they start from the malices all the way to the principles, which they deal, the malices deal with. They show themselves like little gnomes. They come against little kids from conception all the way to the age of 12. The other ones, of course, second, third, fourth, and fifth, to the greatest ones, which is the top notch, if you will, they come against countries and against nations. Every one of them, of course, they're quite different things, but we don't have the time to get into that. But I wanted to ask you, Ms. Heather, with regards all these different experiences, all these different changes, I know for a fact that it's not something that it happens, as Mr. Norris says, you know, coincidence. I really believe that there's a purpose through all this. And I thank you, and I really sense really strong that you're going to be writing a second book probably quite soon, because you're going to get more information with this program that you've ever gotten possibly before. But I wanted to ask you, since that happened, I know you went to that church, and I'm so sorry, I was just laughing a little bit because that was a wild experience. I've never been to a place with goats and cats and roaches.
No, and preachers jumping up and down.
Yes, I'm so sorry. I mean, I've dealt with exorcism, and I do that not often, of course, but I've done it, and we don't even bring bugs, you know, to the situation. And I would love to meet Mr. Bill Bean, because I would love
He's a good guy.
To give me the opportunity. I can go with him to one of the exorcisms because I've learned a lot. But Ms. Heather, I know time is precious. So Ms. Heather, I wanted to ask you, with all this that has been happening, all this that has been occurring, I know that you've learned some things, you've experienced some things, but what's your point of view of the supernatural now? Is it something you want to continue to dig into? I know that when you have tough experiences, sometimes we come to a point where, no, I don't want to deal with that anymore. Is it something that has intrigued you? Do you want to find out more? Or is it something that has closed you to a point where you've been there, done that, closing, and next to the next topic?
Oh, that is a really great question. And I think your prophecy, for lack of a better word, is probably dead on.
He's pretty prophetic, isn't he?
Pretty prophetic, yeah. And I say that, I have actually thought about maybe a follow-up, only because of the experience that I've had and the research that I've done and where it's led me. I started with this idea that, hey, maybe there is something here, but, you know, highly skeptical. And then as I went through and started making this connection and looking at these things, I just thought, no, there's something to it. And I think it really had to do for me, it clicked when I started looking into the myths of things. You know, myth is, as people look at it, as sort of a way ancient people just explained unexplainable things. But I really don't think so. I think that it's not a search for meaning. And I think that myth is the language of dreams and symbols and archetypes, and it's how the ancients shared their universal truths with the world and each other and then eventually us. And so I think the gods and demons and these entities of myths of the ancient past shouldn't be judged on just rationality alone, but should also be looked at, you know, for their value that transcends space and time. And I think it's that transcendent nature of myth that opens us up to our own ideas of what's natural and what's supernatural. And so I sort of had an epiphany through this where I thought, you know, there's more. There's so much more here. And there's definitely a supernatural element to things that I had thought probably was the case, but now I'm pretty certain is the case.
Let's go to Whiting, New Jersey. Lonnie's turn on Coast to Coast. Lonnie, go ahead.
Hi. I'm not going to ask. I wanted to actually share a story with you.
All right.
My husband and I lived in a house that was haunted, and it was a new house. His mother built it. His mother and father built it in 1965. But it turned out that his mother was oppressed by a demon, and we didn't know it. So the house had other demons coming into it. We found out in the strangest way. When she got Alzheimer's, and I was taking care of her, and my husband was going back and forth between Pennsylvania and New Jersey working. So she was just getting more and more evil, if you know what I mean. And because she was not a nice mother-in-law to me at all. And it just got me going crazy. I couldn't stand it anymore. And I was getting nasty. And I realized as a Christian, I could not act this way. And I repented before the Lord. And my husband was home at this time. And I heard in my head very clearly the word demon. And I thought, oh my word, does she have the demon? Because I had seen in the house some entities myself. I had seen an old hag and an elemental spirit that was by my husband's feet one night. We were listening to Coast to Coast, by the way, that night.
That happens all the time.
You know? And I went after them, and my husband woke up, and they disappeared, you know. But when we realized she had a demon attached to her, he wasn't possessing her. He was oppressing her. Because as a little girl, she had seen what she thought was Mary, and her father was like, oh, you're gifted and gifted. Well, she was seeing a demon, and that's how the demon came in. And all through her life, she'd be seeing these different demons in this house. She had seen Indians and all kinds of things. And one day, she was screaming in her room, and I came over. I said, what's the matter, Ma? And she said, this old lady is keeping me down. I can't go to the bathroom. I can't go to the bathroom. She won't let me up, you know. And then we realized, after I heard the word demon, we went over to her that day, and we said to her, what is your name? We asked her three times. The first two times, she said her name. The third time, she said a very weird name. And we knew that was the demon talking.
Jeez.
And we said, in the name of Jesus Christ, you get out of here and you go where Jesus sends you. It left. And I want to tell you, she was totally different after that. Just totally and completely different.
Why is it when you evoke the name of Jesus, Heather, that something dramatic always happens?
That is interesting. I think it's about intention. I think that when you put that out there, the name of Jesus, that idea is just so strong, and it carries with it this very positive, sort of powerful symbol of fearing not. And I think it just reiterates to a negative presence that this is a person that is not afraid, and they feel they're protected in some way. And so I think that's scary.
All right, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with Dr. Heather Lynn, and we will take final phone calls. Her latest book is called Evil Archaeology. And there's a lot of evil out there. And welcome back, Dr. Heather Lynn with us, her work, Evil Archaeology. Heather, what about haunted places? What do you think of those places?
Yeah, that's haunted places are things we see so often on television. Everybody has their night vision goggles staying over, you know, looking for everything. And so haunted, everybody has these experiences. It's another one of these shared experience sort of phenomenon. But something that I found to be really even more interesting than the typical just haunted house and whatnot when I researched was that there seems to be these cases where You have a place that's not just haunted, but there's other things that happen, sort of UFO experiences or sightings, all sorts of different Skinwalker Ranch type things. So I specifically look at a case in the Transylvanian forest that is just really bizarre. It's this forest that has these really twisted and deformed trees, and nothing grows in the middle of this one big oval that's just barren of any life. And people who go in there claim that you just don't hear any noise. There's no bugs. There's no birds. It's just sort of dead in a way. And sometimes people claim they see orbs and strange blue fog and mists. It's been called the clearing, just this area where, you know, the terrifying things happen for a long time. Witches and mediums and mystics have been drawn to the area. And it's really bizarre, but some people will call it haunted, but other people think it's sort of blessed in a way. And so it basically, you just have these areas you find beyond haunted houses where people will go and they feel these energies, or they have these very unique experiences. And strangely, a lot of them end up having UFO sightings and things that you wouldn't necessarily consider part of the haunting experience. They see things like shadow figures or shapeshifters or a whole host of different things that would seem far more paranormal than simply demonic. And that's a really weird one that I found that came across a lot with these areas that were just beyond haunted house and extended into just the supernatural in general.
Interesting take. Let's take some more calls for you. Donna in North Carolina, welcome to the show. Hi, Donna. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey.
Hi, Doctor. Peace be with you.
Thank you.
What I'm going to say is not about ancient archaeology. It's present day. And right now, a powerful force on this earth is the internet. And what strikes me as one of the biggest internet companies, the symbol they use, which is Apple computers, is the apple with a bite taken out of it,
right,
which represents the original sin, which resulted in death for man. But have you ever thought about stuff like that?
I haven't. Just thought it was just a logo.
Well, you do sometimes see strange symbolism used in logos and those sorts of things. I think that you'd have to ask the graphic designer who came up with the logo if that was their true intent or not. But yeah, you sometimes see logos that seem to have an alternative or maybe a cult meaning. And so it is interesting she brings up the internet because it's sort of a ghost in the machine type concept. You know, a lot of people are starting to worry now that the internet itself may become sentient and maybe it has some sort of demonic aspect to it. So I think in this modern era, we have all sorts of new ways to look at things and wonder how evil can be spread. And now with the internet, evil can be spread with just a few clicks of a mouse.
And there's some companies, too, that they think their logos are demonic. You've heard of those stories?
Yeah, I've heard of those. A couple of them. I haven't actually heard of the Apple one specifically being demonic in that way, other than maybe that it would have some connection to the Garden of Eden. But you know, that has a lot of interpretation. So
I know Procter & Gamble got attacked in the 80s with their so-called satanic logo, and the company spent years battling those claims. Years.
Oh, wow.
People accused him of being in league with the devil. Next up, let's go to Franz in Melbourne, Florida. Franz, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much. It's an honor. I've been a long-time listener.
Thank you.
And this is the first time I've been able to speak to you. You can be possessed by the Spirit of God, which is only good, loving, protective, strong, eternal. Or you could be inspired or possessed by the spirit of Satan, which is a hater of God because he was kicked out because he wanted the glory. He was created, but he wanted the glory of the creator. Therefore, God kicked him out after a fight in heaven. If God had destroyed him, the angel, the two-thirds of God's army, would still worship him, but there would be fear in them of being destroyed. So God, in his wisdom, he has the mystery of godliness, the mystery of iniquity side by side for us to behold. Okay? You and I, especially Dr. Heather and you, Nori, and Christian and Jews and those who love the truth, are supposed to be loved by God. You see what I'm saying? And loving God. Satan doesn't want us to love God. God is not concerned about keeping us from enjoying good. Jesus came that we might have life and life more abundantly. His name means salvation. His name is the best that ever is. He took the shape. He's a shapeshifter himself because he made those rules, those physical, eternal rules that the spiritual can take so many shapes. He was fire with Moses. The Bible said that he was the rock that gave the people of Israel water. So while Dr. Heather has discovered all these things, we are supposed to know the power and the goodness and the strength of and the love of God, because my fear for some Americans is that they know about haunted places, they know about Satanism, but they don't know about the everlasting love and power and protection of God. I've experienced this for 68 years. At the end of this month, I'll be 69. And the power of God is so much stronger than the power of Satan. Satan is a creation of God.
Well, let's get Heather's take on that. Is God stronger than Satan?
I think most definitely the good outweighs evil every time. It may be hard to believe that, especially when we are affected by such terrible things. But, you know, I think it's important to look at these scarier or haunted or maybe evil questions. Evil, if it's the absence of love, compassion, or joy, or light, the absence of love can actually teach us to be a light in the darkness, and it can help us understand and recognize what is light. So, if all manifestations of evil are there, we see them. I think by recognizing that evil, we can grow in our own spiritual mastery and wisdom. So, I think it takes an element of the dark to understand what we see is light and to be able to recognize that. So I think it's about discovery. Galileo said all truths are easy to understand once they're discovered. The point is to discover them. So I think it's part of the discovery process that we speak about evil, but definitely recognize at the end, love and good will always, always defeat evil.
It should at least, huh?
It should, and I think it will, and I think that's where faith comes in. I think we need, in the face of all of these terrible things that we encounter on a daily basis, I think that it's the faith that allows us to believe that in the end, love conquers all.
Walter in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Walter. Good to have you with us.
Hi, George. It's not Satan.
You're not Satan tonight. Good.
I've often been accused of by some of the locals here, the local Bible thumpers, of being a Satan or the Antichrist, or you name it, I've been called it, George. George, I think that, needless to say, I think that Dr. Lynn will agree with me when I say that, you know, the ancient Sumerians, the Babylonians, the Egyptians, the Greeks and Romans, and then if you go into Northern Europe, they had their epic tales, they had their gods, Thor, Odin, etc. So, George, obviously the Bible, the ancient Hebrews did not write the Bible in a vacuum. Obviously they borrowed, or I don't want to say the word plagiarized from one another, but obviously, one epic tale affected another. Now, you know, the Bible obviously has become, the Jewish Torah has become part of our Western civilization. It's become a major religion, and that's largely because it's due to PR, George. It's gotten the best hype. because of Gutenberg's printing press, and obviously people like Martin Luther and Francis Bacon in England with the King James Version of the Bible. It's been the best promulgated, so obviously it's become part of our lexicon, if you will, in the West.
Yeah, that could be.
Well, George, I think, you know where I'm coming from, George. I think that, obviously everything can be explained through science. I'm a firm believer in the fact of evolution. And, George, if you look at things like the Ten Commandments, obviously the Hebrews borrowed it from the Babylonians, had the Code of Hammurabi, this code of ethics. And, George, if you look at the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill. Well, obviously, all social animals instinctively know that they're not to kill one another. The chimpanzees, the gorillas, the orangutans, they obviously know that in order to survive, they shouldn't kill one another. And if you another commandment, thou shalt not steal. Well, animals have a pecking order. Even wolves, when they make a kill, they know that they're not to steal from one another, so to speak. And even like if you look at the commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery. Well, if you look at a herd of elk, they fight over the females. So obviously, one male's telling the other, hey, don't steal my wife, so to speak. So obviously, George, I think that it can all be explained through science.
Science explains a lot. But in this particular case, Heather, science doesn't investigate the afterlife. Why not?
Well, I think hubris a lot of times. I think that there's so many unknowns, and the idea that some of them may be unknowable. I think it's also about reductionism. I think a lot of times these are such huge concepts that, they simply cannot be reduced to, some working theory. And I think that, is intimidating. But there are actually efforts that some people are doing to look into the scientific components of demonology in Morocco. Scientists have been studying demonic possession since the 90s, working under a theoretical framework of these demons being like little germs or microbes. They have a germ theory of demonology. They actually are able to detect under a microscope, in their opinion, demonic activity. They've developed mathematical formulas to calculate the demon's movement and behavior. And so there are people who are trying to look at it. Demons and this whole question of demonology in a scientific way. And I understand what the caller is saying, absolutely, that these are just, amalgamations of other books and stories in these ancient texts. But my concern would be to say that doesn't discount their value in a true sense. So there's scientific truth, and then there is metaphysical truth or a deeper mythological truth that can resonate within all of us. Joseph Campbell talks a lot about that, and so does Jungian psychology.
Grab Don in Kent, Ohio. Squeeze him in here. Go ahead, Don.
Brother George, great show again.
Thank you, sir.
Growing up Roman Catholic, we had incorporated in our altar a little compartment called the altar stone. In the Latin, it's called the sepulchrum, which contains the bones or the tissue of the patron saint of the church. Yet, in the Catholic Douay Bible, 2 Kings 23:20, Josiah burned the pagan priest's bones on the altar to defile them. So, Dr. Lynn, what's your take on the religious use of relics like that?
A minute to go, Heather. Go ahead.
I think it's a bit of a showmanship and propaganda and theater. I mean, I think it's more of a way to demonstrate power and control, and not to, say that relics aren't important or anything. It's quite the contrary. They're so important that if you were to do something like that, it sends a clear message to the people who are seeing that.
Interesting take. But you are pretty spiritual, aren't you?
I am. I'm an Episcopal. And I am very spiritual, but I'm a skeptic in some ways and not a debunker or anything like that. I'm very open-minded to all sorts of possibilities, but I do sort of have my own personal spiritual beliefs, and it falls along the line of Christianity and the more specifically Episcopalian.
The name of Dr. Heather Lynn's book is Evil Archaeology. It's available at Amazon.com, of course, and her website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Heather, thanks for being on the program. Good to talk
to you
again.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
On our next Coast to Coast program, we are going to have Who's Behind the Secret Door. That's right. Four guests. I have no idea who they are. I've got to guess who they are, and we'll continue the show. We'll take calls. But tomorrow night, Who's Behind the Secret Door? For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.